the offense. Yeah, that time he hooks it into right field on the changeup, and this ball's gone! He gulped that ball! Into the second row! This kid's got ridiculous power!
Should have thought him a high heater.
He looked terrible on the first two changeups, and then gulps one out to right.
Pretty fun having Yordan Alvarez in the lineup. That dude has prodigious power. I mean, he, as Todd Callis said on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, he figuratively golfed that ball into right field. He just shows such easy power.
It's also the nice ones. You catch it in the sweet spot out in front there, and your arms are all the way extended, and it just makes it look like a nice golf swing. It's
yes.
Like, you know, it looks way easier, and it doesn't look as fast as the bat's actually going, but when you're a ridiculously strapping young man like Alvarez, then that's nice to see. Were you shocked that that was the first guy ever to hit a home run in his first two games?
A little surprising.
I suppose. I don't know. That shouldn't be a surprise, but for some reason it seems like that would have happened before. And there's not a whole lot to be worried about with Yordan Alvarez right this moment, I would say. I guess with any of these young guys, what you worry about is the pitch selection, except that he's shown some signs of looking a little. He's shown no signs of anything to worry about. I'm not going to sit here and try to punch holes in anything. I'm just going to enjoy this for what it was.
I mean,
we suffered through Kyle Tucker last year, and now we're getting the exact opposite.
He struck out twice last night, but that's obviously going to happen with somebody who, you know, has his swing and his power. But this is what we were waiting for. This is the guy that we were anticipating for the course of the last month or so, having this kind of bat in the lineup for this baseball team. And I realize that the competition has obviously gotten worse here with Seattle, Baltimore, not as much Milwaukee. They're a good team. But it is incredible what this team has been able to do without their three best baseball players. I mean, I know people know they're banged up, but when you really think about it, the three guys they have out are their best baseball players. The three guys who are out, Correa, Altuve, and Springer, are legitimate candidates like for the American League MVP award when they're healthy and when they're playing well. And what this team has been able to do without not just one guy, not just two, but all three guys is kind of crazy.
When you think about, okay, how do you get over that hump from being the beneficiary of tanking? Like, you've got all this first-round talent, and you've got all these guys, and you've got your Springers and your Bregmans and your Correas and everybody else, even though Springer wasn't necessarily a tanking guy. But you've got all this talent. Like, how do you make that transition into a team that's built for the long haul? I guess this is one of them, is that when you have three studs out, you still have such a strong pipeline that you can bring the pipeline up and get an extended look at them while also retaining your lead at the very top of the division without suffering for it at all.
Yes.
Like, this is your dream as a talent evaluator. Like, Luno, everybody, you sit here and you watch these guys in AAA and you try to figure out, all right, what are they really? What's Derek Fisher really? It's taken 3 years to figure it out. And finally, finally you're starting to see Derek Fisher as he is right now. Kyle Tucker, you had your one little stint last year and you don't know that much about him. But all these other guys, you bring them up and they're getting extended playing time in the major leagues and you're starting to realize, all right, well, you know, Mayfield obviously needs a little bit more seasoning, but we know a lot more now than we did a little while ago. And the same thing for all these other guys. It's just astounding. It's astounding that they're sitting where they are in the standings with all these injuries.
46-22. I think this is tied for like the best start in franchise history right now. They're obviously.
I don't keep up with those anymore because they've been hovering along. The graphics are always the same. It'd be like they'll be one game ahead of or one game behind where they were in 2017.
We're getting tired of the winning.
I'm tired of keeping track of all the prodigious stats.
I know that's something that AJ Hinch said. Astros won this game, by the way, 10-8 against Milwaukee last night at home. Obviously scoring a lot of runs, a lot of power last night. I know there's something that concerned you a little bit about the Altuve update. Is that accurate?
Well, it was when I heard Luno talking about it. Hinch talking about it. There was some good news, but it was one of those pieces of good news that made me kind of nervous about the entire year.
He ran the bases today. He's going to take a full pregame. This is the most he's done this entire time. He's ready to go out and play on a minor league rehab assignment, provided that he gets through the next couple days. He's working at full speed. He's doing things that, quite honestly, he hasn't done dating back to pre-injury last season when it comes to like, some of the techniques and fundamentals and things that he's able to do with his lower half. So that's exciting. We're going to work him out pretty heavy today. We'll work him out again tomorrow. We're off on Thursday. we get to the weekend all feeling good, then we're likely to see him out on a rehab assignment.
So that was one of those things that's a nice update, but it was when he said he's doing some things that he hadn't been able to do since pre-injury last year. I guess it was a little bit of a, it was an awakening moment, like a wake-up moment where I realized, oh, wow, he was headed into this season still probably way more banged up than he was letting on. And it makes me nervous about, okay, just exactly, if he's just now getting back to where he was pre-injury last year, do we need to maybe anticipate more trouble throughout the season? His body is probably way more banged up and affected by that surgery than maybe we wanted to admit to ourselves early on.
Or even maybe before the surgery, right?
Yeah.
It's weird to me.
Well, no, yeah, before the injury. Well, no, we knew the injury and the surgery, but I'm saying, like, just at the start of this season,
yes,
he wasn't as near to full health as we thought he was.
I mean, it's definitely something to keep an eye on, especially with the kind of big contract that Altuve has. He had all offseason to get himself healthy. He got hurt again with the same leg. Then he went on a rehab assignment. Then he was hurt again.
Yeah, the second injury, the injury right now is on his surgery leg,
yes,
from last year. That's,
yes,
why, and we knew that already. But it was Hinch specifically saying that he's just now doing some of the things that he hadn't done since last year. Like, or did I listen to that?
I heard the same
injury last summer, right?
Yes, yeah.
And look, we've seen what it's like trying to win a World Series and trying to beat the Red Sox when you don't have a healthy Jose Altuve.
They need him.
It's hard to do.
No doubt. All right, Mad Radio on a Wednesday. Mike and Seth McClain's going to join us coming up at 7:35 this morning. So now we are in day five of post-Brian Gain. We're in day five of the Texans general manager search, and they still have not been granted permission to talk to the director of player personnel for the Patriots, Nick Caserio. Do you agree, as John Lopez said, that no news is bad news?
Yes, I do. I agree that no news is bad news because it seems in this murky world, and the one attorney that always emails me these like really long and detailed emails, really good, is, I don't know if he wants his name out there now, his name's Michael Moss. He's actually been digging for like through the CBA and looking at all of this verbiage and telling me about what he thinks about the actual the jargon required to pry Caserio out of New England's hands. The biggest obstacle is this. If New England tries to claim that Caserio has, that he reports directly to the owner in New England, then they could feasibly block this. I don't think it's possible for New England to convince Roger Goodell or the league that Caserio reports to anybody except Bill Belichick. And that's the trouble there. I don't think that New England's going to be able to block this if they'd, As long as the Texans say that Caserio reports to Cal McNair and he has final say on personnel,
yep,
I think that Bill O'Brien, in the situation he's in, and also the fact that he's buddies with Caserio and Jack Easterby is buddies with Caserio, I think that's the structure the Texans will have. And there's no way in hell Bill Belichick's going to be able to convince anybody in the world that he doesn't have final say over personnel, even if there's a contract.
Yes.
I guess if there's a contract that says it, but then they're setting themselves up for a huge fine.
There's some language in the NFL rules about the phrase high-level employee.
Yeah.
If the Patriots can argue that Nick Caserio is a high-level employee, but what that means is that he would have final say over free agency, over draft picks, those kind of decisions. He doesn't need final say over the 53-man roster, but to be a high-level employee, you would need, based on the letter of the law, you would need final say over picks, over free agents. And
yeah,
I don't think anyone really believes that anybody else has the juice in that building to do that other than Belichick.
So maybe in this case, no news is actually good news because it means that maybe New England's trying to block it, but the league is reviewing it and trying to figure out exactly
maybe
what. I asked, by the way, so I was on a Connecticut radio station yesterday with our friend Andy Gresh, and I asked him, I said, well, I mean, you tell me. Is there any chance at all that Bill Belichick at this stage of his career and given what he has with Nick Caserio, that he would allowed Nick Caserio to be in charge of personnel? And I got about a 15-second belly laugh out of that.
Okay.
from Andy Gresh. He thought it was ridiculous, the notion that Bill Belichick would ever, like on contract or in reality, relinquish complete and total control.
I'm sure Andy's the guy who has a good belly laugh.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where I'm at.
I'm going to text him right now.
You can do that.
So
that's fine. I'm sure.
Right.
I think it's a compliment. I think Andy Gresh is a good belly laugh.
Speaking of that, good job last night, Tyler White.
Yes, good job.
Yeah.
So the Jets, it's not the same situation, but it took the Jets, an incompetent franchise, a while to hire Joe Douglas. It took them at least a good few weeks to hire Joe Douglas from Philly, who everybody loved.
Starts and stops.
Now, the difference between Joe Douglas and Nick Caserio, Joe Douglas wasn't the GM of the Philadelphia Eagles, and so the Jets had an easier time of getting somebody like that.
Yeah.
The reason I'm saying that is because normally I would agree with John, no news is bad news on Caserio, and I worry that's the case, but ultimately here's where I'm at. Just like I'm skeptical about the Texans winning games against the Patriots, I am skeptical about them getting somebody like this from the Patriots until it's signed, sealed, and delivered. That's where I'm at.
You know, they've allowed him to interview for jobs before.
Miami?
Yeah. So it's not like they're saying there's no way in hell we want to give Nick Caserio up. The difference this time might be that New England lost a ton of assistant coaches. Like, the cupboard is bare there with their assistant coaches. So you wonder if Bill Belichick, even if he's not blocking it directly, is he sweetening the pot for Caserio? Is he giving him a ridiculous contract?
That's a worry.
Yeah.